Connie and I just came out of the Grand Canyon. We spent the last week rafting 300 miles down the Grand Canyon. And I've never had an experience like that in my life. I'm really grateful for air conditioning. And I had an experience there that I don't know how to talk about it other than using fairly traditional religious language. And yet I also know that when I speak in Unitarian Universalist churches, there's a wide diversity of philosophical, theological perspective in our congregations. I mean, where else can you go in our church? In fact, where else can you go in Western culture that in one church, one association, you've got strong atheists, humanists, religious naturalists, you've got all of us recovering, Baptists recovering, Catholics recovering, Presbyterians, all the things we're recovering from. You've got some of us that aren't in recovery, we just also happen to be UUs. You've got nondescript spiritual seekers that want to have their kids to have a liberal, inclusive education, and then you've got Jews and pagans and Buddhists like in one church. And some of us love God language and some of us barf at God language. Some of us love ritual and some of us hate ritual. We're all over the map on all kinds of things. And yet the amazing thing is that we can stand shoulder to shoulder with each other, not just tolerating our differences, but actually celebrating our differences and work together to co-create a just, healthy, beautiful, and sustainably life-giving future for planet Earth and as many other species as possible. And that's one of the reasons why I love speaking in Unitarian Universalist churches so often. In fact, Connie and I have spoken to almost 360 Unitarian Universalist churches now. An evangelical reporter in Dallas, Texas asked me not long ago, he said, "I see that you've been to a lot of Unitarian Universalist churches. Why is that?" And I said, "Because that's the low-hanging fruit. It's the easy pickings when it comes to evolution, right? Because we don't have biblical literalists in our midst. And yet, I love speaking in evangelical settings as well. I don't get a chance to do so as often, but whenever I do, there's been a positive response among most people, not everybody. Some people walk out. So I want to speak about what came to me, what was, to use traditional language, revealed to me, that is, an insight that I had never thought about quite in this way before in the Grand Canyon. Because to use traditional religious language, I'd say I had an encounter with God. And what I mean by that isn't that some being up there, out there, outside the universe, spoke to me in a voice that was discernible, that if I had a tape recorder, I could have recorded it. I'm not meaning that at all. I mean that reality confronted me in such a way that I felt differently and began to see differently and feel differently from that point on. And in the same way that the... One of the things I loved about this selection of the hymn, the hymn that we sang, "A Fire Mist in a Planet," the end of the first line, "Some call it evolution and others call it God." That line at the end. See, we confuse the issue of science and religion if we conflate or if we don't distinguish objective reality and subjective reality. See, for all of human existence, as long as humans have been around for roughly 3 million years in terms of Homo habilis, walking upright using stone tools, we domesticated fire well over 1 million years ago. We've been using language for at least 500,000 years or more. For all of human existence, certainly since we've been using language, we all have a subjective experience and an objective experience, and the two are very different. It's kind of like our day and night experience. Our daytime is just everyday experience, and our nighttime experience is full of magical things. In fact, if we could do at night, or if we could do during the day what we do at night during our dreams, we'd all be having supernatural or miraculous experiences every night. Because we do fantastic things. In fact, about 2 months ago, I jumped 100 yards, a football field. And I thought, man, that's pretty good. Probably not too many people can do that. And then I woke up. It wasn't quite as impressive when I was able to distinguish objective and subjective reality. And yet, for all of human history, when people tried to use language to describe the things that were most important, most meaningful, most impactful, they always used a blend of day and night language. And so our religious traditions emerge in different parts of the world. People living in a harsh desert climate and people living in a lush tropical climate are living in a radically different world. So the plants, the animals, the terrain, and the climate that we use as metaphors to describe the nature of reality are going to be different in different parts of the world. I mean, if we on this side of the room, let's say, had never experienced sheep, the Lamb of God wouldn't be a part of our tradition. Right? If we over here had never experienced the political reality of a king, the kingdom of God would be a completely foreign concept. We tell stories of lotus blossoms or whatever was a part of our experience. So when we understand the emergence of language and the understanding that cultures emerge in different parts of the world, our religious differences make a lot of sense in the way that they couldn't before we had an evolutionary understanding of things. It's very difficult to truly appreciate religious differences if you lack an evolutionary worldview. Even on the question of God. I mean, if you pay attention to what the media are portraying right now, you'd think there's only two options on the menu. There's the young earth creationist and intelligent design creationist, those who don't have a whole lot of respect for mainstream science and evolution, but are coming from a theological perspective. And then you've got your new atheists, Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, those that don't have a lot of respect for traditional religion, but are coming from an evolutionary perspective. And you think that those are the only two options on the menu. And yet, as most of us in this room know, there's millions in the middle. I call it the bulge in the bell curve. Those that integrate evolution and religion or spirituality or theology, but they do so in a way that it's not just reconciling. For me, it's a mainstream scientific understanding. What 97-98% of the scientists of the world agree with strengthens my faith, deepens my faith. And what I mean by faith isn't beliefs. I mean trust. It strengthens my trust. I trust reality. And that's what religious people mean when they talk about faith in God. Because whatever our different concepts of God, you know, some cultures imagine God as an eagle or a turtle or a father or a mother or a king or a lord or all these different metaphors and analogies for ultimate creativity, ultimate reality. And yet all of them are personifications of the way reality really is. Faith in God means trusting reality. And this isn't theological rocket science, that all cultures, all peoples have had to deal with what is undeniably real. Death is undeniably real. Birth is undeniably real. The fundamental laws of the universe are undeniably real. The forces of nature are undeniably real. We can't avoid being confronted by these, being sometimes blessed by them, sometimes being devastated by them. And it didn't take a theological rocket scientist to realize that if you trust reality, your life works better than if you resent it and fight against it. This makes complete sense. We all know this. And so did the ancients. And we stumble if we take their mythic language, their night language, their poetic, metaphorical language literally. So when I say I had an experience of God in the Grand Canyon, what I mean is reality. I had a whole new way of seeing reality. So let me just share three things. Now I'm sharing it here in a Unitarian Universalist setting, but this is the gospel. This is the message that I'm planning on preaching to the wider world, especially to my fellow Christians. And again, I'm a naturalist. I'm a Christian naturalist. There's nothing otherworldly, woo-woo, supernatural in my perspective. It's a naturalist perspective. Because evolution, our best understanding of evolution, actually will, I believe, usher all the religions of the world into their greatness in the next 50 to 70 years. That no religion could come into its glory, could come into its full potential, until we understood deep time. Because one of the most important things I'm going to say this morning, human beings are literally the universe, after some 14 billion years of unbroken evolution, now becoming conscious of itself. Humans are the universe becoming aware of itself. The universe has been expanding and becoming more complex and more complex. And then in this solar system, the universe became complex enough that it could begin to contemplate its own nature. We're nature uncovering its own nature. We're the universe becoming aware of itself, literally. Let me say it this way. We didn't come into the world. We grew out of it. In the same way that apples grow out of an apple tree, humans grow out of the universe. We grow out of the dynamics of the planet. A human being looking through a telescope is the universe looking at itself and going, whoa.
a biology student looking through a microscope. It's the planet Earth learning with awareness, with consciousness, how it's functioned unconsciously and instinctually for billions of years. We're also the Earth becoming aware of itself. Brian Swim is a professor of cosmology up in the San Francisco area. He's got these two great quotes that help people just sort of get this stuff. He says, 4 billion years ago, the Earth was molten rock, and now it sings opera. Right? Earth was once molten rock, now it sings opera. And nobody put anything here. When the Bible speaks of God, like Genesis 2:7, speaks of God forming us from the dust of the ground and breathing into us the breath of life, that's a true story. It's a mythic, what Joseph Campbell would call mythic, or a night language way of talking about the fact that we grew out of the dynamics of the planet itself, and it's reality that made that happen. Here's another quote from Brian Swim that I think you'll like, although this one, I got to say, is a little audacious. He tries to take the entire 14 billion year history of the universe and sum it up in two sentences. He says, you take a great cloud of hydrogen gas and you just leave it alone. And it becomes rose bushes, giraffes, and human beings. And folks, we don't believe this. We know this. This is what 97, 98, maybe 99% of the scientists of the world agree with. This is considered factual knowledge. So let me share these three kind of main things that I'm excited about in terms of why I'm now evangelistic about evolution in a new way as a result of this Grand Canyon trip. The first is that without an understanding of evolution, that is, without an understanding of how the galaxies, this solar system, Earth, life, and human cultures and technology have all been evolving. Okay, I'm not talking about just biological evolution. I'm talking about the evolution of everything, everyone and everything. Without an understanding of that, we will necessarily have trivial or parochial understandings of God and divine guidance. Because all cultures have had a sense of guidance that you could count on, that you could trust. And however they conceptualize the divine in all sorts of different ways in different cultures, all cultures had some way of talking to about or pointing to what was fundamentally trustworthy, life-giving guidance. And yet, when the cultures started reaching the place where we started writing things down a few thousand years ago, we started concretizing or crystallizing that guidance and saying that the really important guidance is in this book. And yet by doing that, we've blinded ourselves to the guidance that science is now revealing through the entire history of the universe. In fact, the way I talk about it in my book is I say, facts are God's native tongue. That reality speaks through evidence. And that from this perspective, as the quote from Carl Sagan that I talked about at the beginning, remember, science is at least in part informed worship, that if evidence is how reality reveals itself, if God speaks through facts, to use religious night language, then where we go to for guidance, first and foremost, are not religious texts written 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, but what we go to first and foremost is from what God, what reality is revealing through the entire range of sciences today. I mean, who of us would let a first century dentist fill our children's teeth? Yet so many of us let, or so many of our neighbors let first century theologians fill our children's minds every day. It's because we haven't had this understanding that divine guidance is not just parochial, that is, you know, Hindus have the Bhagavad Gita, Jews have the Torah, Christians have the Old and New Testaments, Muslims have the Quran. But where do we today, moderns, go to for guidance? Well, I'll tell you where I go to and where we as a culture, where we as a species can go to first is the entire history of the universe as scripture, as divine guidance. And when we understand this, and this is a huge piece of what I'm going to be doing on Tuesday night, is that when we understand the whole history of the universe as guidance, that is what we can learn, we can align our laws, our medicine, our politics, our economics, our education with the way life works, and we can move into a just, healthy, sustainably life-giving future. To the degree that we ignore how evolution has created greater complexity for billions of years and think that our role is to dominate nature, we will ultimately be booted out of the body of life. We will cause our own extinction if we continue with that mindset. And so the divine guidance we get gives us realistic hope. See, I am deeply hopeful when I look to the future. And one of the reasons I'm so hopeful is that for billions of years, the main thing, the number one thing that has catalyzed and furthered creativity and transformation for billions of years is chaos, breakdowns, and bad news. It's the number one thing. Seriously. I mean, think about your own personal life. I can't speak for you, but I can sure speak for myself. The most difficult, painful, challenging times of my life, the kind of times I would not want to have to relive, have also been the most important growing times. And so whatever this recession, or even if this thing becomes a depression that we're in the midst of, I can say confidently that on the other side of it, whether the other side is 6 months from now or 16 years from now, we will be cooperating as a species far more intensively than we even are now. Because of some of these long-term trends that I'll talk about on Tuesday night. So, I guess the last thing I want to talk about, mention this morning, in addition to a mainstream scientific understanding of evolution, realizing that is untrivializing God language and untrivializing divine guidance language. It's not just about ancient books. It's not just big daddies in the sky. Right? We're talking about reality and how reality reveals itself and how we can know that and get guidance from that. In addition to all that, I'll let my concluding thought this morning be this, that nothing is more important at this time in human history than coming into integrity at all nested levels. You all have seen nesting dolls, like Russian nesting dolls, dolls within dolls, right? A fundamental truth that we now understand about the nature of reality that there's just no disagreement about. Whether I speak to evangelicals or atheists or Buddhists or Hindus, and I've spoken to all those groups many times, nobody debates the nested, emergent nature of creativity. Subatomic particles within atoms, within molecules, within cells, within organisms, within planets, within galaxies. At all nested levels, every level can create. And God is a personification, or the goddess is a personification or a proper name for ultimate reality, ultimate creativity. And this is a God beyond belief or disbelief. We don't believe in reality, or let's say, put it this way, it doesn't matter whether you believe in reality or not. Reality just is. In fact, one of my favorite quotes from Philip K. Dick, he says, "Reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away." And that's what I'm pointing to. That's an evolutionary understanding of the divine, is reality personified. Okay? So when I talk about being in integrity, what I mean is being in right relationship with reality. Being right with God, to use religious language. And we can't even know what it is to be in integrity, much less know how to live in it, if we lack an evolutionary understanding. Because we're going to have an inaccurate understanding of how we got here, who we are, and what the trajectory of life, how evolution has created greater complexity. And so we'll lack the hopefulness. Because one of the things I can count on in this room, I'm going to guess that at least 90% of us or more, maybe all of us, are committed to justice, peace, sustainability. And yet we can become overwhelmed with the bad news because, frankly, there's a lot of bad news out there. And it's only when we can see these long-term trends that we can become hopeful. We can be inspired to be in action. Not with a sense of guaranteed outcome. We could destroy ourselves. There's no guarantee. There's nobody pulling the strings. There's nobody manipulating it and making it go in a particular way. But Connie and I both trust reality. To use religious language, we have faith in God. And again, we're naturalists. But we trust reality. Because over and over again, we see the same thing. Did you know that eyesight emerged over 24 times in different lineages independently? The universe was going to see itself. No matter how many times you go to the beginning and run it out again, right, as Stephen Jay Gould wanted us to do, you're always going to have eyesight. You're always going to have flying creatures. You're always going to have the tree form. And you're probably going to have some creature that comes to know that it knows. And even if we destroy ourselves, Connie, who's not a gambling woman, says her money in the next 3 to 5 million years is on raccoons. You got that manual dexterity, right? So again, what I'll be focusing on, just to recap the three reasons I'm evangelistic about evolution, is that one, we can finally understand the creator or the creative process in ways that the ancients couldn't have possibly. Darwin didn't kill God off. Darwin gave us the first real glimpse of the real creator behind and beyond all the mythic portrayals of the divine. So the first is that we can now have a realized understanding of divine creativity and how we got here and who we are. The second is that it helps us know what it is to be in integrity, how to be right with God, to use religious language, how to be aligned with reality as reality really is, not as we just wish it was. And then the third is we can get divine guidance, that is, trustworthy, life-giving guidance, from the entire history of the universe that our best science is revealing to us. That's why I say scientists are empirical theologians. Science is empirical theology. Now, I know that most scientists would kind of like barf at that kind of language. But what I'm meaning is that science is giving us a deeper relationship with reality. And this is something that the world needs to hear. And this is something that I'm going to spend the rest of my life popularizing this perspective, as is Connie. And so what I'll be sharing on Tuesday night is a program that I first developed for the United Nations. I developed it about 2 months ago, and gave it at the United Nations. And it's called Evolution and the Global Integrity Crisis. And what I'm talking about is being the cost of being out of integrity at net multiple lesser levels. And why it is that evolution, a sacred understanding of evolution, a meaningful interpretation of evolution, can help us come into integrity so we can move into a healthy future. And we will only do it with an evolutionary worldview. And I use a slide program, a very dynamic PowerPoint program, so it's very visually rich. I do encourage you to invite your friends and neighbors. In fact, if you haven't already received it, I'll be sending an email to your administrator that you can just cut and paste and make it easy to invite friends. If you know that you can't be here Tuesday night, you've already got a commitment or whatever, Connie and I are evangelistic about this perspective. We want to share it with as many people as possible. And so we have 4 DVDs of our best programs. Each of them is 4 hours. And we give you the rights to make copies. So you can burn as many copies of our DVDs as you want for others. It's a great way to share this perspective with your friends, neighbors, and relatives. And if you're flat broke, just pay whatever you can or just take one. We just want to get the word out. I'd like to close with a quote. This will give you a sense of why Connie and I have been living on the road for the last 7 years, why we'll probably live on the road the rest of our lives. It goes like this. It's also from Brian Swim. He's the cosmologist I quoted a couple times earlier. I am convinced that the story of the universe that's come out of 3 centuries of modern scientific work will be recognized as a supreme human achievement. The scientific enterprise is a central gift to humanity. I'm convinced, he says, the story of the universe that's come out of 3 centuries of modern scientific work will be recognized as a supreme human achievement. The scientific enterprise is a central gift to humanity. For the first time in human history, we finally have a creation story that's not tied to one cultural tradition, nor to a political ideology, but instead gathers every human group into its meanings. We are in the midst of a revelatory experience of the universe that must be compared in its magnitude with those of the great religious revelations. And we need only wander about telling this great story to ignite a transformation of humanity. Connie and I have interpreted that last sentence very literally. Thank you.